From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Having it all when it comes to work and family life these days can be tough for anyone. It can seem especially tough for women. Anne-Marie Slaughter knows. She's a high-tier player who backed off for the sake of her family and famously wrote about it in a 2012 essay headlined Why Women Still Can't Have It All. Now she's following up with a book looking at what it will take from spouses, employers, and the government to make the path a little easier for women. This hour on Point, Anne-Marie Slaughter and her husband on having it all, or trying anyway. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Women, what do you need to make it all work? Work and family. What's fair, what's right to ask from your partner in life? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from New York is Anne-Marie Slaughter. She's CEO of New America's big public policy think tank and professor emerita of politics, international affairs at Princeton University, where she was dean of the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. Big stuff. In 2009, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton appointed her director of policy planning for the U.S. State Department. That is one of the very top jobs there. After a couple years, she went home and wrote the 2012 article in The Atlantic magazine headlined, Why Women Still Can't Have It All. Her new book is Unfinished Business, Women, Men, Work, Family. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Her husband, who's picked up a lot of slack at home with their two sons, will join us in a few minutes. But first, the woman who's tried to have it all, Anne-Marie Slaughter, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
We talked when you had, headed home from Washington instead of hanging on at that point, and had written the famous essay, Why Women Still Can't Have It All. Remind us of why you felt at that point in this soaring career of yours that it wasn't time to go on up or stay up there, but to go home, and why you came to the conclusion then that women still can't have it all.
So my oldest son was a teenager. He was he had been 14 when I left, or I guess 12 when I left, and 14 when I came back, and he was having a very rocky adolescence. And my husband had been lead parent at home and really holding down the home front, but it was clear to me, at least, that we needed kind of all hands on deck, and that the right choice at that point, as much as I would have loved to have advanced in foreign policy work at the State Department, the right choice was to go home.
I mean, you seem to have done all right. I mean, we'll look at that. But you say that for you and for women right across the spectrum of jobs and work in this country, the United States does not have an adequate, what you call, infrastructure of care. What's missing?
Right. Well, and then that goes to your point about why did I write the article? Because I've had every conceivable advantage, from money to a flexible schedule and a career that I've been able to drive. And when I realized that I couldn't fit the two together the way I wanted to, and I experienced a lot of negative social reaction to that, I started thinking about, if I can't do it, just imagine all the women who have no flexibility, or the women at the bottom who are the breadwinners and caregivers both. Mm-hmm. And unlike other advanced industrialized countries, we famously don't have paid maternity leave. We don't have paid family leave. We don't have high-quality, affordable daycare. We don't have elder care. We have a whole infrastructure for the competitive part of the economy, but we don't have what should be an equal infrastructure for caring for each other.
What was the negative social reaction that you got? Did people look at you and say, why aren't you home taking care of your son? Or did they say, why are you going home when you're supposed to be forging ahead, empowering, modeling the empowered woman?
Well, it reflects my circles, but much more the latter. What I got was, if I told people I'm home because if I stayed at the State Department, I would have to give up my tenure at a top university, then they understood. But I would very deliberately say, we have two teenage boys at home, and I don't want to miss the last 4 years they're at home, or they really need intensive parenting right now. Then I could see this kind of reassessment going on, where essentially the person I was talking to would be thinking, well, I thought she was a real power player, but maybe she isn't, you know, because clearly she's putting her family before her career, and that means she must not really be somebody who's headed for the top. And that's the calculation that employers make all the time when women or men decide to work flexibly or go part-time or make any trade-off for their family. And I just thought, that's just wrong.
If it was applied to you, but maybe you're in such a rarefied company, maybe this isn't a universal experience. I mean, I think a lot of Americans do or would understand if a woman wanted to and could retreat a little bit to take care of the family, or a man for that matter. Wouldn't a lot of people say, yeah, that makes sense?
They might well say that makes sense. But they are very quickly knocked off leadership track or management track at work. So it's not that we don't understand that that's a choice you can make.
Mm-hmm.
It's that we don't understand that someone can be plenty ambitious and want a, you know, fulfilling career and simultaneously think, look, I only have children during a particular period of my life, or my parents are only aging and still here during a particular part of my life. And for that period, I want to make room for care, because caring for those I love is just as important to me as my career. And that, most people think, nope, it's one or the other. And if you're on the fast track, you have to stay on that track. And that's the only way to get to the top.
You see that, say that there are things we need from government, from employers, from spouses. We're going to hear from your husband, Andrew Moravchek, in just a few minutes, Anne-Marie Slaughter. But let's start with the other two, employers first. And these things are easy to say and obviously hard to bring about. But if we had a proper or a sufficient infrastructure of care, what might that look like from employers?
Well, from an employer's standpoint, there's a lot of things that you can do in terms of just making clear what your values are. And the first is to say, you know, I'm much less concerned about when and where and how work gets done, and much more concerned about results. If a good manager should say, I need this work done by this time and of this quality. And if the person can deliver that work on time and of the right quality, then the fact that, you know, she or he went home at 5 to pick up their kids and be with them until they went to bed and then went back to work, or the fact that he or she works from home one day a week, or any number of ways to accommodate that, should be irrelevant. So that's really the first thing I would say.
Easy to say, hard to do. I mean, even at Yahoo, you got a woman CEO there, Marissa Mayer. She had her own baby, came back after 2 weeks, got criticism for that, but she was, you know, she's CEO. She had a nursery at work, but she ended telecommuting for everybody else at the company. That doesn't sound friendly to the flexible, do it anywhere, anytime you need to.
Well, you know, I'm a CEO of a nonprofit, and I wrestle with these issues, too. I think Marissa Mayer was actually right. A lot of people will be upset to hear that. But I have run an organization where the culture needed to be changed, and that's what she found at Yahoo. And she had to really shake it up. So that's what she did. The best way for her to shake it up was to say, nope, we are in trouble. And if we don't fix it, you're not going to have any jobs. And you have to be, you know, present and collaborative and engaged.
So to heck with your problems at home, isn't that what every business or many businesses have done forever?
Yeah, but if they didn't do that when she asked for it, they weren't going to have jobs at all. So in her case, I mean, Yahoo was going down. Mm. I understand that. But once you've righted the ship, then my point is, you know, you're stuck in a really old dynamic of how work gets done if you think that the person who comes in earliest and stays latest is the person who works best. That person's just inefficient. They're not managing their time well. They're not taking enough time for themselves, particularly people who really need to be creative and innovative. And that's the way work had always been done, but it was work done by men who had full-time caregivers at home. And even then, I don't think it was a good way to work.
What do you want from government? I remember when we had little kids and, oh, how we longed, you know, for France, where there's almost free daycare all over the place, yeah, and good quality. And here we were scrambling about to find anything. But this isn't France. What do you want? What could might we have in the USA from government on this front?
I know I often think if American parents just traveled to any number of other industrialized countries, they would realize just what we're missing. But you're right. We're not France. We're not Sweden. We're not Denmark or even Germany. But there really, in 1971, a bill for government-sponsored and supported daycare passed Congress with a big bipartisan majority. Bipartisan majority, and then got vetoed by Richard Nixon. So if we could be there in 1971, we can absolutely create an American system of paid family leave. We have it in New Jersey, and Chris Christie is our governor.
Republican.
And absolutely. And subsidized high-quality daycare. There are many different ways to do that. You can provide tax deductions for employers to do that on site. You can provide subsidies. You can provide government care through municipal or even state governments. There are lots of ways to do it on the right or the left. But the big point for government is this is investing in the next generation of Americans. You know, the Pentagon has on-site daycare and pays its early education teachers the same amount for the same experience in education it pays all its teachers, because the Pentagon knows if we do not invest in those children, particularly in the first 5 years, they're not going to be able to defend the country. And I would argue they're not going to be able to innovate in a global economy.
We've just got half a minute before the break, but you then look to spouses, in your case, a husband, and saying, you know what this may take is for the spouse to actually step back in their career, that you can't both do it at the same time, that somebody may have to tamp down their career to take the lead parenting role. We'll turn to your husband, but a word on that. That's a significant part of your formula.
It absolutely is. And the way to start is just think, imagine you're talking to a room full of men and you say to them, okay, you want to make it to the top. And you'd say, one thing you need is a lead parent at home. Same is true for women.
The guys, I'm sure, would all nod, and they'd have certain presumption about who that was going to be. Maybe.
Oh, yes.
Maybe, but maybe not in a younger generation. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour with Anne-Marie Slaughter about women, men, families, and the working life. How to make it all work in a country that still makes very few concessions in the workplace to the needs of family. Her new book is Unfinished Business, Women, Men, Work, Family. There's an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. She's now CEO of New America. It's a big think tank based in New York. She has had big positions, continues at Princeton, also in the State Department with Hillary Clinton, right up there near the top. Wrote the lead story back in the summer of 2012, the headline in The Atlantic. The headline was Why Women Still Can't Have It All. It got a lot of people stirred up. We're going to hear in just a few minutes from Anne-Marie Slaughter's husband, Andrew Moravchek, who helped out in her case. You can listen and hear how that might go in your household. These issues are always, always around us. Here's just a little bit funny. This is Republican presidential candidate Carly Fiorina in June at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. She said a reporter had asked her if her hormones would prevent her from serving in the Oval Office. She posed this question to the audience.
Can you think of a single instance in which a man's judgment might be clouded by hormones?
Okay, just maybe once in a while on that side of the ledger as well. We talked about Marissa Mayer, CEO at Yahoo. She has a son. She's expecting twin girls in December. She's CEO of Yahoo. Back in 2012, she was interviewed at Fortune Magazine's Most Powerful Women Dinner, and she was asked how she does it all. Her answer there, maybe too simplified, but it was prioritized. She quoted former Green Bay Packers coach Vince Lombardi.
Vince Lombardi says, you know, in my life there are three things. God, family, and the Green Bay Packers, in that order, right? And I think that, you know, for me, it's God, family, and Yahoo, in that order.
Okay, but maybe a few more assets there. She was criticized for only taking 2 weeks off when she had her son in 2012, but she built a nursery next to her office. Can you do that at work? I'm sure she had help in there. She ended telecommuting for a lot of Yahoo employers in 2013, but she also doubled paid maternity leave there from 8 to 16 weeks, and she says that when she gives birth to her twins later this year, she'll again have that brief maternity leave, but she's got extra options. Anne-Marie Slaughter is with us from New York. Unfinished Business is the book. And Anne-Marie, before we go to your good husband, we've got a lot of women who want to speak with you. I'm going to give them pride of place here. Carrie in Spokane, Washington, you're on with Anne-Marie Slaughter.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for this moment. I got fired this morning. I'm 68 years old. My son's 45. Okay. In the 70s, I was called to get a man's job, which I was able to. 2 years civil engineering degree, worked for county engineering, road department, had a man's job, salary, sick leave, all of the benefits, and everybody hated me. What was I doing there? Why wasn't I wearing a skirt and nylons like all the other women?
Yeah.
It was tough. My son and I both paid the price. And I'm asking her, why should a woman have it all? Why should anybody have it all? If you want kids, take care of them.
I mean, are you saying you regret that you worked or had to work, Carrie?
If I was going to be a good mother, which I wasn't able to be because I carried so much junk home and dumped it on my kid. I mean, he's fine. He's not a criminal. He got a college degree. He's married. He's got a daughter. Everything worked out okay for him, but oh my goodness, it could have been so much worse. And regret? Yes, I would like to have been able to be a mother.
And we heard you say fired today. We're going to come back to the Anne-Marie Slaughter. Carrie's not so sure that this was the way to go for her or anybody.
So, Carrie, thanks very much for the question, particularly today for you. One of the reasons I wrote the book was to get rid of the having it all frame. I really don't think that is the right way to think about any of this. Millions and millions of Americans are worried about having enough, and having it all is the way that my generation talked about having a career and a family. The way I look at it now, balancing work and family is a luxury. Equality is a necessity. And what I'm looking at is how do we create a situation where it is equal for women and men to take the time they need to be with the family members they love, either kids or parents or other family members, and also be able to fulfill their full potential in their jobs. And you were a real pioneer. Your generation of women, about 10 years ahead of me, really did break down barriers to allow my generation to work. But to do it, you had to be absolutely like men, and that did mean you didn't have the ability to be probably the kind of mother you really would have wanted to be and be on the job. And I'm saying it just doesn't have to be that way. That's our culture that makes it that way. And we can change it, and our policies, and we can change them.
Carrie, do you believe it? Do you buy it? Can you see how it might have been different? You were a single mom, so you didn't have a lot of choice. Having it all suggests choice somehow. You were required to do it all. Could it have been made easier for you in some way that you can imagine working out in this country, in your life?
Yes. At one point in time, I took an article to work and posted it on the bulletin board that talked about child parenting leave for kids and daycare accessible to working people. And one of my bosses came and ripped it off the bulletin board, which was supposed to be public for everybody, and said, if you don't like it here, leave.
Right. And because he had a lead parent at home.
You
don't want to go there with who he was. He was worse than that.
And why are you out today, Carrie? I mean, I don't want to get too much into your personal business, but that's a big deal. You're 68 and, I don't know, fired, did you say?
Well, no. He told me if I didn't like it there, that I could leave and find a job someplace else, maybe even leave the country if I didn't like America.
I mean,
it was so basic. I was very fortunate. I had some support at work. Limited family. I was new to the community, so I didn't have friends.
Yeah.
So we were on our own. We had big brothers and sisters, thank goodness. We had Head Start. Back then, there were some things that could help us. But one thing I do want to say is it isn't a single mother or a dad. It's a single amalgam of nothing. So that kid doesn't get a mother or a father. Mm. It gets this caregiver, which whatever energy is left over.
Right. Carrie, I appreciate your call. I don't know about fired. Maybe fired up, and I appreciate your call very much. Let me get one more, if I may. Tara in Gallatin, Tennessee. Tara, you're on with Anne-Marie Slaughter.
Thank you so much for having this conversation. I am a millennial. I'm 33. I have an 18-month-old son.
Yep.
I had a very high-powered career in Nashville as a landscape architect. I have a wonderful small business employer who's allowed me to work flexibly from home 3 days a week. My husband works for a big corporation. There's no flexibility in his job, and I have a nanny. I'm trying to cobble it together, work from home, and it's just it makes it a total sacrifice for a woman. You know, especially women of my generation, we still have to work. We're paying half the bills. We're paying student loans. We're doing all these things, and I thank God every day that I work for a great company in Nashville. But I tell you what, it is so stressful, and I often
and you've got a nanny, Tara.
I have a nanny that works for me and watches just my son, and I'm lucky that I can afford her.
I mean, talk about a sweet deal, and still, you're really in the heat of it. What's the hardest thing about it, Tara?
the hardest thing about it is, like, this morning when I dropped my son off at my wonderful nanny, and he's just crying. And, you know, yeah. you don't want to leave, but you got to go into work. And even being in this part-time capacity, it would say knocked me off of the fast track in my career. You know, as a yeah. lead landscape architect now, you know, that's kind of faltering. But I'm still so lucky to work for a company that will even allow me to work in this capacity as part-time.
Tara, stand by. Anne-Marie, she's right in the thick of it. 33, 19-month-old son. Sounds like a really strong career, but you hear exactly that sort of pullback that she's found necessary?
But what I hear is just a deep inequality. I mean, why on earth is it that, as you say, you and your husband are both providing cash, but we just assume it's your job to provide the care? I mean, the idea that his company doesn't say, well, let's see, you just had a child. So, you know, you should have the same amount of leave to care for that child beyond the recovery from the physical birth that the mothers in our company do, because you're the father, just like she's the mother. Now, maybe in the old days, okay, so the father didn't need to take time off because the mother was the one who provided care. But my point is, you're working too. You are providing cash, so he has to have the same ability so that the two of you are cobbling it together. That makes an enormous difference. And if you can afford additional help, then so much the better. But that's what's so unequal here.
Tara, do you have the nerve? Would he have the courage to go to his corporate employer and say, hey, I need a different policy?
I've asked him multiple times. And honestly, if he could get just the 2 days work from home a week like I have, we wouldn't need the nanny. And then we could have two, the parents at home, you know, the stability of that, and not to mention the release of the additional huge financial burden of this wonderful nanny that I have. Yeah. But, you know, he's unwilling, and he's not even on a fast-track career, you know, to a leadership position like I was. I mean, he does a great job, but it's just a job for him.
But will he even raise it at work, or he's like, come on, I can't ask that?
Yeah, he's seen other people at his big corporate employer try and do similar things, and you know, they just find some reason in the upcoming couple months to kind of fill that position with somebody else.
Tara, good luck. I so appreciate your call. Anne-Marie Slaughter, this call is right
Thanks,
in
Tara.
Your wheelhouse. This is a potential leader in her field, and you hear what's happening.
And it's not, you know, what I hear is that's not a good social and economic choice. We just heard that there's a woman who was on the fast track, who's very talented, who should be heading to the top, and a man who has a good job, but he's less ambitious, or he's on a track that is not going to take him as high. And somehow she's the one who's having to make the compromises, rather than having them both be able to combine having a family with having a job, and then releasing her potential, which is better for us as a society, and having both of them at home would be better for their child.
We're talking with Anne-Marie Slaughter. Her new book is Unfinished Business: Women, Men, Work, Family. She wrote Why Women Still Can't Have It All a couple of years back. Now she's laying down a kind of agenda for how we could get closer. You say partners, spouses play a big role. Husband, in your case, your husband, Andrew Moravchek, has been talking about this, writing about it lately. He's got an essay in the October issue of The Atlantic, headline, Why I Put My Wife's Career First. Anne-Marie Slaughter, please stand by in New York. Andy joins us from Washington. Andrew Moravchek, Andy, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
I'm happy to be able to get the two of you together with your high-powered careers and have a few
in
minutes
different
on the
cities.
Air.
In different cities.
Together, quote, unquote. So why did you put your wife's career first? And what does that mean? After all, you were a professor at Princeton. It doesn't sound as though you're exactly, at home searching for cigarette butts.
Well, there are two questions there. I put my wife's career first because she was really more ambitious, more driven, but also she had a career as it developed, as she became a public persona and went to work for Hillary and all that.
Yeah.
That was really much more demanding minute by minute, so that it was just impossible for her to take care of the kids, be the lead parent in the same way that it was possible for me. So it was really a question of job situation and what she wanted to do. And it was much better for us as a couple.
And ultimately, the job in the State Department for Hillary Clinton took her away most of the time from home, from New Jersey to Washington. You describe yourself as stepping up as the lead parent. You had tried to share it 50-50 earlier in your careers. How did that work out, Andy?
It worked out fine for a while. And then two things happened. One was she became more engaged in her career, and she proved to be more ambitious. But the other thing is the kids grew older. And when toddlers become teenagers, what you find out is that their problems are more complex. They're more uncertain. They require more intervention by parents, and you can't get a nanny to intervene when your kid is having a crisis with the cops or with school or with something like that. And so we really needed a lead parent at home to step up, and that turned out to be me.
So talk about what the elements of being a lead parent were or meant for you. What did you actually do, you know, morning to night?
Well, lead parent is the frontline parent, the person who's presumed to be there. So in a simple sense, it's the person that gets them up in the morning, the person who makes sure the homework's done and they're getting to bed on time at night, or at least tries to do so with teenagers. And the person who handles crises, the person whose name is on the emergency call sheet. And that kind of stuff is really important from a professional standpoint, because the bottom line is if you're on call for your kids, you can't be on call for your boss.
How long did you take that role? Are you still pulling that role?
Yeah.
I am basically still.
The wife says
that
yes,
role,
so I guess it's yes.
I would say Anne Marie is at home for dinner, you know, two, maybe three nights a week, and travels a lot. And actually, ironically, as a function of being a spokesperson for lead parenting, we'll be home less over the next couple of months.
Anne-Marie, how did this come about? Did you lay down the law and say, Andy, you knew when you married me, I was a ball of fire going places. Now we've got kids and needs and you've got to do this? Or how did it unfold?
No, it wasn't ever that clear cut. I mean, he certainly knew when we met that, you know, I had a lot of ambition and I was very passionate about the work that I've been lucky to do. And as Andy said, I mean, when they were little, we were living in a place we both had university jobs. The kids' school was close by. Our work was close by and we could make it work. And then it was more as I got offers. And when I got the offer to go to Washington, Andy knew that was a life dream for me. And he supported it. The kids supported it, too. They just didn't want to move to Washington. And we didn't want to move them. And then when I came back, again, as I became more of a public figure and had more invitations, it was more, this makes sense for us as a family. You are earning a bigger income. You are providing these things, and I am providing these other things. I'm anchoring the family in a way that works for all of us. But it evolves, and it could flip back the other way.
I'm trying to figure out how much of this is applicable in families where, you know, they're not running the foreign policy of the United States or not professors at Princeton or Harvard or wherever. Does the same thing apply right across the spectrum of jobs, Anne-Marie, this sort of swapping out, swapping in, who's lead now? You take a back seat while I surge forward. Does that apply all over?
I think it certainly can, but it does require the big change that we heard about with Tara's question, which is, The woman has to say to the man, I just got a promotion. There is no way you can take one at the same time because no one will be there to be the lead parent, to anchor the home front. So you have to defer your promotion so I can take mine. Or I've got to move and you've got to move for me.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Anne-Marie Slaughter about women, men, families, and the working life, how to make it all work. in a country that still makes very few concessions in the workplace to the needs of family. Her new book is Unfinished Business, Women, Men, Work, Family. There's an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. You can check it out. She's been at Princeton. She's been high in the State Department under Hillary Clinton. She's CEO of New America Now think tank in New York. Her husband, Andrew Moravcek, is also with us this hour, professor at Princeton himself. And he's been writing about how he took the lead in parenting when the family really needed it and her career was surging. In The Atlantic, his piece is headlined, Why I Put My Wife's Career First. Lots of interesting response online. I mean, Neil says, how can anyone have it all? What does that even mean? Diana writes to us, few people are asking if men can have it all. They're just expected to spend less time with their kids, Diana says. And Karen writes, let's keep this conversation going. I'd like my kids to have better options for having a family and holding a career, more part-time positions, job sharing, more paid leave. She says, too much time at work has repercussions for our mental health and for our kids. Andy and Marie, we've got callers for you. Martha in Bowling Green, Kentucky. You're on, Martha. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, the comment I would like to make is the spouse is the key to women working, I think.
The spouse, okay.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I have extreme ego and push and drive, and my husband didn't or would step back and let me just drive forward and supported me the whole time, took care of the children, did the grocery shopping, saw that we had meals. Throughout the years, I opened my own business in 1966. I never really ever worked for anyone, so I didn't have a boss ever. But he supported me the whole time in what I was doing, and I think that's the key right there. Two people with the same ego, it's really going to be difficult to fulfill that family life.
So you're kind of ahead of the curve there. Opened this business, I see here, in 1966. Your husband was sort of a trailblazer, or he just recognized you had it going on, Martha.
I think so, yes. I can remember early in our marriage, he made a comment. You know, some of my friends have been saying to me, you've got a good business going. You know, maybe we ought to stay with this. But he did work outside of the home, of course, and had another job. But he always worked his job around mine.
Martha, I really appreciate your call. Anne-Marie, Andy, what about the interpersonal dynamic here between marriage partners that makes this possible? Is everybody capable of doing what you're advising, Anne-Marie, what you've done, Andy?
Well, I think...
let Andy go first.
I think the question is not so much whether we should prescribe a particular solution for every couple, but instead whether we should try to create a situation where couples have more choice and opportunity. You know, in a way, this is a very conservative idea more than a liberal idea. It's about creating equality of opportunity or equality of choice for people, and particularly for men. Because whether you want to call it having it all or a more balanced life, it's not just women that need this. It's especially men. Because men are cast in this role of being career-only spouses. And what these reforms that Anne-Marie is proposing would allow is for men to balance out their lives in a way that would have a larger component of care. I've found that very satisfying. It's certainly good for Anne-Marie, and it's good for our kids. And I think it's also good for men.
Anne-Marie, you had a husband who was willing and prepared and, to be fair, in a position where he could do this. I mean, a timeout for him meant he could still be a professor at Princeton.
Yes.
This is kind of a not your typical job profile.
No. No, I absolutely agree with that, although there are plenty of men who, as Andy says, can be the available parent. They can still be doing a job, but be the one who are more available if they're willing to work more flexibly or work part-time. So that, you know, just as women can do it, men can do it. And I agree with Andy. I think actually many men, and Diana wrote this on the website, mm-hmm. many men want more time. Many men wrote to me after my article and said, you think I have it all. or we have it all, but actually, you know, as Andy says, we're cast in this role. But I would also say I think women have to look hard at ourselves, because many of us are not willing to let men not just help out, but actually take charge and do it their way at home. Mm-hmm. And many of us are, you know, are socialized the same way men are, and we're not quite sure a man who isn't the lead breadwinner is really as masculine as we'd like.
Well, that gets into that interpersonal thing. Did you understand the two of you early on that this would be okay? Did you have some touchy conversations when you began to broach it? Or did you, maybe in your case, as Andy says, circumstances just kind of thrust you into this?
Well, I had never had any doubt that he was plenty masculine and very much, you know, the man in the house. I've got three men in the house. You know, I would say we are both strong personalities, and we've kind of tussled it out and worked it out as we've gone.
Daryl, Andy, please. Sorry. Yeah.
But you have to be secure in order to do this. Mm-hmm. And to be secure, I think that the cost has to be acceptable. So the takeaway, as you've pointed out, is not that I've paid a massive cost to do this.
You still had quite a fine career.
I have a great job, and I'm serious about my job. Mm-hmm. The takeaway ought to be that because of my job and because of the kind of job it is in the higher reaches of American academia, I have precisely the things that we're saying everybody should have that would make it possible for other people to have this wider range of choice. Childcare, paternity leave, flexible hours so we can, you know, go home early and work at home late at night or stay home one day. Mm-hmm. Long-term career flexibility so I can structure my job differently for a few years and then make it up in later years. All these things are essential if you want to have the kind of flexibility within the couple to manage this kind of thing.
I'm just trying to think how this works if you're a truck driver or a policeman or woman or a store manager. Hold that thought. Daryl in Tampa, Florida, you're on with Andy and Anne-Marie.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So, you know, I just wrote a paper for my for my business, and the tagline, I think, applies to this.
Okay. You there, Daryl? All set up for that tagline. Daryl, call us back. We
yes.
want you. Let me get another one here. Daryl, call us. Bradley in Williamsburg, Virginia. While we're waiting for Daryl's tagline, what's your story, Bradley?
Hi, Tom. Sorry, Daryl, to take your time here, but I'm in the military. I've been in the military for going on a decade now, and was deployed for really almost all of it up until now. Just got to a more family friendly duty station here, and my wife has been the support role that entire time, and man, she was great at it. But now she decided to follow her ambition, and she's in school. She's a full time student. And studies, I mean, full-time, and she's studying all weekend, every day. And all of a sudden, I find myself packing lunches and going to playgrounds and doing things that I've never really been very, very, very good at. But we really had to balance our family goals versus my personal career goals and hers. And it's definitely been an adjustment.
So, Bradley, if I may, how does that work? You're in the military, so it's not as if you're not unoccupied. What is it about the military life that makes it possible for you to fill that role?
Well, you know, we try to have a rotation where you're in a very stringent, very deployable and a time period, and you're supposed to rotate to a time where you can have more time with your family and time to relax.
Okay.
And it doesn't always work that well, but after 8 years of deploying, I'm on my rotation where I'm taking a little more family time.
And you're comfortable with this sort of sharing that there's going to be a compromise here and you're willing to pick up the slack?
Oh, and not only am I comfortable with it, I mean, it's really necessary because I have to realize that I'm going to retire in probably 10 years. And so we're definitely going to need something for the family to fall back on and have that safety net there. And also we have two daughters. And what we talk about all the time is I don't want my daughters growing up thinking that their place is in the kitchen in the home or packing lunches, that they really need to share that role with their husband later on in life. And so my wife is being an example to them going to school and progressing in her professional life.
Yeah, Bradley, we wish you very good luck with that, and I really appreciate your calling. Anne-Marie, one of the things that you write about is a kind of a tag team approach where over the long arc of careers, there may be times when The wife is given that lead position, and the husband's doing more child care. It may flip over time. At a different time of life, the roles may change, Anne-Marie.
Absolutely. And Bradley, thank you for that. I say that you should think about your career in terms of interval training. So if athletes, when they're getting into peak condition, they train really hard and then they slow up for a while and they go hard again. And it's just as Bradley described. He had a period where, he was deployed and he was all out for his career. And now he can come back and give more time to care and his wife can go hard. And really, if you think about how much longer Americans are living and that they're going to need to work longer because we can't afford to retire, thinking about those intervals where you do tag team, I think makes a lot of sense for both women and men.
Dayton, Ohio. Eric is calling. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to call and say that it is definitely a challenge for lower middle-class families to achieve this. I'm the what you would call lead parent, I guess, more fun than stay-at-home dad. But
okay.
What we had to do is really just reassess what things we were spending money on and what and not, so that she could enjoy a full career and I could stay at home more with the children and be that, quote, lead parent.
You mean you looked at the cost of childcare if you both worked and did your calculation that way?
It was a little bit of that, a little bit of, making sure that we wanted to raise our kids with our values, but if you do choose this path and you don't have a high income, you definitely have to make some sacrifices and decide what things are important to you to spend money on and what aren't.
So are you now looking at her career and judging very carefully, honey, are you making enough progress? We need you to become a big manager over there.
No. Like I said, we're a lower middle income. She works at a salon. She loves her job. She loves the people she works with. She has a great job. And, that's great. And I want her to enjoy that. I had a job that wasn't the most fun for me, so I decided to start taking care of the kids more and, supplementing our income with some part-time work.
Eric, I appreciate your call. Andy, you've been in Eric's shoes, but in a different setting. What about for lower income, lower middle income Americans who don't have the resources around them that you and Anne-Marie have? Does this approach work if you, a lot of people are just slammed and they sort of both have to do everything they can just to pay the bills.
Well, the statistics show that in fact, many Americans are in exactly this situation of having one full-time wage earner and one part-time. The question, as Anne-Marie pointed out earlier, is really, who are those people? Is it always the woman who's the part-time person and the man who's the full-time person? Or do we move to a society that is more equal, that offers broader choice and broader opportunity to both parts of the couple? And what happens when you put men in that role of choosing is it becomes clearer that we need all these support structures in place because our expectations are that the guy is going to have a career. So, we need to do that.
I want to get one more caller here, Joe in Syracuse, New York. Joe, you're on the air with Anne-Marie Slaughter.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay.
I'd like to make a comment. I'm just the guy you're looking for. I told you, lady. I am a truck driver. My biggest fight is the hours. A truck driver and a pilot's pay is based on 70 hours of work week.
Yeah.
No overtime, no time and a half, no paid by the hour. You get paid by the trips, by the runs, things like that.
Yeah.
It's never changed. It's never changed in 25 years. It's 70 hours a week, and that's what your pay is based on. So you make what an average nurse makes for working 70 hours a week. Okay, so we can make okay money as far as an RN pay, but you're absolutely just about working two jobs, and I think that should be something that gets changed in politics and stuff like that. I think everybody should be based by hourly, and you get paid for the hours you work, 40-hour work week.
Joe, it's hard to have that big role in a family when you're working 78 hours a week. Anne-Marie, what about the political implications of what you're proposing here? All these changes that you're prescribing, they haven't exactly blossomed overnight in this country. And what Joe's talking about, I'm sure you can hear, wouldn't happen without a fight. What's it going to take?
Well, he's right. First of all, I thank him for calling. And I argue in many, many professions, truck driving one, we've tilted just way far over toward, competing all the time, thinner margins, less money, longer hours, and that it is not sustainable. It's not sustainable for families and individual workers, but it's also not sustainable for the economy as a whole, because we don't have time then to invest in either our children or our parents. And it also imposes an enormous health burden. But in terms of political changes, the work, you know, the future of work is on the table. Technology is driving changes so that you've got all sorts of people arguing that, you know, jobs are disappearing, where it's not clear, you know, who's going to be working and how long they're going to be working. So this is actually the right moment to look at how we create a market for work and for care. And I would just say, you know, in the beginning of the last century, we didn't have any regulation of work. We didn't have 8-hour workdays. We didn't have any kind of health safety. This is the time to stand up and say, wait a minute, what kind of economy do we want so that we can compete and care for those whom we love?
Well, an interesting couple with us today. On another occasion, Andy, we're going to have you back to talk about whether the EU survives. Andy Moravchek is director of the European Union program at Princeton University.
It's been a pleasure, Tom.
It's great to have you with us. And Anne-Marie Slaughter, we're going to have you back to talk about Hillary Clinton's emails. You're in there talking about Libyan rebels and all the rest. Interesting terrain. The new book is Unfinished Business, Women, Men, Work, Family. Anne-Marie Slaughter, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for all your input, as always. It's just amazing, here and online. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.